Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it's always a pleasure to head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend, Dr. Jerry Bunch. He joins us for the next hour of the program. His appearance brought to you by our good friends at New Balance Knoxville, right there in the suburban shopping center just west of Westtown Mall. Shop local, and they will take care of you like you wouldn't believe. Doc, it's quite the experience the moment you walk in the door for the first time, isn't it?
Yep, they take care of everything for you. You don't have to worry about a thing. You walk in and tell them what you're looking for, tell them what you want to do, give them an idea of what you exercise, just walking, jogging, just going shopping, or just going to go on a trail somewhere, or you want to actually get some serious exercise. But they'll tell you, they will pick out what's best for you, and they will give you the options of all different colors and shapes and sizes and styles, and then fit you perfectly. And then it's wonderful service, customer service. The good thing is they'll keep your records on file, so next time you want something, you can call them. They do have curb service when you go by if you want to pick up something else or another pair of shoes. You can go by and pick that up as well. They'll take great care of you there, David and Sharon and all the staff.
That's right. Shop local, shop at New Balance Knoxville in the suburban shopping center just west of Westtown Mall. As you mentioned, they offer curbside pickup as well as a delivery. It's among the many priorities of New Balance Knoxville to ensure the safety of their patrons. Doc, so much to unpack from this past weekend, but it didn't happen against Marquette, but Roy Williams got win number 900. What do you think in terms of the milestone for Roy with the Tar Heels?
Well, I'm excited for Roy. Congratulations to Roy Williams, one of the real nice guys in the sport. I got to know Roy back when he was coaching at Kansas, and he was so accommodating, so humble, so unassuming. You think that someone that was that successful would be a little more pretentious. He is not. Couldn't be more thrilled for Roy. The last few years have been a little bit of a struggle. I know he's had some health issues, and they've had him personally had some health issues, and then they've had some issues with the players, thrilled that he could finally get that win, that landmark win, although the last couple of years for the Tar Heels, it has not been easy.
If you have a question or comment for Doc, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Doc, we get another somewhat surprise winner. William Byron wins at Homestead. It's the third week in a row.
Yeah, how about that? How about that for a way to start the year? Three surprise. I mean, everyone thinks you're going to start 2021. You're going to be hearing about the same three or four guys. You're going to be hearing, Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, Joey Logano, Kyle Busch. No, none of those guys have won a race yet. How about that? And, William Byron did win last August at Daytona. That was his only win until this past Sunday, until yesterday. But, 23-year-old kid gets it done, driving for Hendrick Motorsports. It was a different race because they start in the daytime and then the race ends at night. The track changes drastically. So there were guys that were really good during the day. And then, once the sun went down and the track cooled off, a lot of guys were having trouble getting grip. But not this kid. What a great 23 years of age. How about that for William Byron? And what they had done is they reunited him with Rudy Fugle, his crew chief, because Chad Knaus had been his crew chief, and Chad decided was promoted to run all of Hendrick Motorsports in terms of competition. So they went over to Kyle Busch Motorsports and hired Rudy Fugle, who had been his crew chief when William Byron was running the trucks a few years ago. And those two together won seven races. So they put them back together, and here are only their third start together in Cup. They win a race. How about that?
Well, and I don't think we touched on this last week, but the first 2 weeks were won by first-time winners for the first time since, 1950, which was a remarkable stat from NASCAR.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't ask for – you think sports are predictable? No, it's – holy cow. For these drivers, and they didn't back into it. It wasn't a huge wreck where they were the only one to survive. They were there and they earned it. They certainly earned the victory. Christopher Bell last week, young man, getting a chance to drive, for Joe Gibbs Racing. Remember Joe Gibbs had to let another young driver go in order to bring Christopher Bell in. Everybody thought he was the future. He was going to be one of Toyota's future superstars, and they were right. Young man did a heck of a job, ran down the veteran Joey Logano at Daytona on the road course, passed him with two laps to go, and won the race. So, yeah, how about that for what's happened in the first 3 weeks of the season? Three first-time winners, all three now are in the playoffs, which means now there's only 13 spots left in the playoffs, and so it's going to get a little crowded. These guys, these veterans trying to win races to be able to find a way into the playoffs at the end of the year.
Speaking of veterans, those at Joe Gibbs Racing, not especially enthused with the analysis of one Kyle Petty in terms of job security. What did you think of that flap over the weekend?
Well, if you want Kyle's opinion, all you got to do is ask him, because he's more than willing to give you what he thinks is going to happen. There's no political correctness there. I think Kyle was just being honest. He's, you know what? The man's grandson, Ty Gibbs, has already won a race, and in a few years, Grandpa is going to want to put him in one of his cars in the Cup Series if that's the way things develop. So, you know, look out. You better be winning over there or doing what you want to do to be a team player, because this kid's coming. I think some of the guys took exception to that, including Denny Hamlin. Now, Denny Hamlin's got his own team. He's got, you know, 2311 Motorsports, which is, you know, the Bubba's car, you know, with Michael Jordan. So, you know, Bubba Wallace. So I think that, but some of the guys were, you know, I think Denny in particular took exception to that, saying that no one should be looking over their shoulder. Joe Gibbs is not that kind of owner. We're all going to be here for a few more years.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, again, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local in the Suburban Shopping Center, just west of Westtown Mall on Kingston Pike. We'll get a break. A final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams of John Wilkerson. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Let's go to the phones where Lynn joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Lynn.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. This isn't my question and the reason I called, but, Doc, I might comment on Kyle Petty. You know, if you remember, I had that same question last week when I called. I probably phrased it a little differently, but I was talking about the young guns and the Gibbs deal, and that was my thought line, my thought process exactly, that if I were those old guys, I'd keep on winning.
Yep. Well, you know, Kyle understands, you know, having driven for his dad and who drove for his dad, I think you understand how the family works in racing.
Yeah. Listen, I've got a hypothetical for you. If I had talked to you before the season and asked you to name one driver that would win one of the first three races, would you have got it right?
No, I would not have.
No, I wouldn't either. I would never in 100 years thought that those three would have won the first three races of the year.
You know,
I'm also pretty excited. Go ahead.
The analyst yesterday, after they got off the air, somebody told me that if you would have asked Jeff Gordon and Clint Bowyer to list the top 12 drivers they thought would win at Homestead, William Byron wouldn't have been on the list, either one of them, because they didn't think he had the experience to run that well on a track that tricky, but of course he proved them all wrong. So, yeah, what a surprise. Absolutely, what a surprise for all of us.
Yeah, sure did. Now then, that leads me to my next question. Do you think this could be the year that we don't see all winners make the playoffs?
You know what? It's very possible, because that could happen. You know, it absolutely could happen, because you've got three spots already gone, and you got all these guys that you think are going to start winning. You know, you got to believe Harvick and Truex and Kyle Busch and Hamlin and all these guys are going to – Logano, they're all going to start winning. So that's another 5, 6, 7, 8. I mean, so, my goodness, we haven't mentioned Chase Elliott, the defending champion, yet. So, yeah, it could easily be – if those guys win, there's only a couple of spots left. And I still think that some of these young guys still have a chance to win. There's some more young people coming along. And Kyle Larson, by the way, you know, Kyle is so good on these mile-and-a-half racetracks. Everyone thought if he's going to get a win, it might come early, even at Homestead, and he ran really well. So, and remember, they go to Vegas and they go to Atlanta, so we could easily see Kyle Larson get a win there. So suddenly, if that happens, boy, the panic begins to set in a little bit for some of these guys that are accustomed to just winning a race and getting in the playoffs, because now they got to worry about being high enough in the point standings.
I'm assuming that if there were 17 or more winners, that the 16 highest in points would go to the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, it would come down to point standing, so that's the tiebreaker. So not only if you've won a race, that's good, but you can't fall out of races. You can't pull the pin on the hand grenade and try to do a Hail Mary and suddenly finish 35th. You've got to make sure you get good finishes outside of that win to be able to stay up in the points.
Yeah, somebody must have told Michael McDowell that, because he sure is coming alive so far this year.
Yeah, how about that? Three top 10 finishes, three consecutive top. Of course, he won Daytona. You know, he had a top 10 finishing on the road course, and then this past weekend. So how cool is that for that team, for Front Row Motorsports? These guys are, you know, headquartered out of, I mean, the race shop's in Charlotte, but they're headquartered out of Danridge, Tennessee. You know, Bob Jenkins, Brad Jenkins, that whole organization. How good is that for Michael McDowell? I mean, that just goes to show you that this could be a really special year. We thought last year with the pandemic was going to see some unusual things happen that we never predicted. I think this year may even top that so far.
Yeah, it's looking like it. I sure hope so. Guys, it's good to talk to you. It always is. Have a good week.
You do the same, Lynn. We sure do appreciate you. We've got another half hour with Dr. Jerry Punch. Again, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of West Town Mall. They have curbside pickup, also delivery available. But it's great to deal with them and see exactly what they've meant to the community for quite some time. We'll get a break. Hour number two of Sports Talk's right around the corner. Another half hour with Doc Punch coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Credibility, honesty, and a dedication to bring you the sports information you deserve each afternoon. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Another half hour with Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of West Town Mall. Back to the phones we go. It's Jerry who joins us next. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Say, Doc, last week somebody asked you about who was the first team that formed teams in NASCAR, and you mentioned Holman Moody. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But the first memory the first one that I saw once I started going to the races, and of course there wasn't nothing on TV, but Pete Hamilton won the Daytona 500 driving a second petty car. And I saw that race at the Tennessee Theater on closed circuit. They showed, I don't know how many races they showed up there. I know I saw an Indy 500 that Bobby Unser won. And then it was, you know, the picture was a little blurry, but for the time, I think it might have been around 1970. It was really a heck of a show. But then Buddy Baker drove that second petty car for a while. I know you know all this. And Junior Johnson, before you had Darrell Waltzeff and Neil Bonnet in those Budweiser cars, I think he had a two-car team. But you mentioned Holman Moody, and the other, you couldn't think of the other one right offhand, but I can't either, but I think it had some K's in it, like was it Kickoff or something like that? It had those steam cars. I think that might have been, was that for the Hemi? Did they have the Hemi engines? Is that where that was?
Lee Petty and Richard, father and son, they ran 42 and 43. They ran those two cars when Richard first started driving. So they had team cars that were father and son. But also back before that, remember you had the Flock brothers. You had Tim and Fonnie Flock that were brothers that raced. But my concern was I wasn't sure that the owners were the same for both those cars. I was trying to confirm that the same owner had both cars. I think there were two different owners when Tim and Fonnie, when the Flock brothers drove. I haven't been able to confirm that as of yet.
But what the kid was, do you know who was that other team that, you know, when Holman Moody was running? But like I say, it was a Kickoff or something like that.
Yeah, Carl Kiekhaber. Yeah, yeah. No. You talking about when Kiekhaber came in, and they had the Chrysler. They had the big Chrysler Hemis, and he had multiple cars. In fact, his cars are in the Chrysler Museum up in Detroit. They have a great exhibit up there that what he was a part of back in those days. Yeah, there's some great history, some incredible history of the early years of NASCAR. In fact, Lee Holman is still around. He's got an office, and I bet you didn't realize that Holman Moody still exists. It's on paper. It still exists, and he has an office. John Holman's son, Lee, and in Charlotte, right outside of Charlotte, and he will show you all some incredible artifacts he's kept over the years from the early years of Holman Moody.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'd like to see that. But one of the strangest teams, it really wasn't a team, I guess, was this guy named J.D. Stacy. That he didn't own the teams, but I think he just paid. I think he maybe had five or six drivers that would paint the cars, and he just give them so much money to paint the cars in his name and or in his scheme, and put his name on them. It was really a great paint scheme. I don't know why when they had these throwback, I've been expecting somebody to duplicate that Stacy paint scheme because it made a really a good looking car. But
J.D. Stacy came in and had five cars. He actually came in and owned. He threw a ton of money away. He threw a ton of money away in about 4 or 5 years with these cars and came in and was gone about as quickly. There were several people like that. Warner Hodgson, he was from California. He was a real estate magnate from California. Came in and spent a lot of money to have cars in the sport, multiple cars in the sport. Very wealthy guy. I remember he came from California in his jet and told his pilots they had to land at North Wilkesboro Airport, not far from the racetrack. Well, the airport was about 1,000 feet shorter than what they should have been able to bring that jet in. But he told his pilots, this is sort of the kind of guy he was, if you want your job tomorrow, you'll land this plane today. So that's what we were told. And so they landed the plane. They did get it stopped before they went off on the gravel. And right beyond the gravel was a big ravine because you're in the mountains of North Carolina right there where they – now, the good part is they landed. The bad part is – there's no way that plane was going to get out of there to take off again. So they had to make other arrangements. I think they had to end up disassembling part of that and getting it somewhere else to take off. But, yeah, those guys came in with lots of money. The old saying was those boys had more money than they had sense, and they didn't mind spending it.
Yeah. One other thing real quick here about the teams. I think maybe Dale Jarrett or somebody mentioned it last week, said that Robert Yates said when they made Victory Lane big enough for two cars, that he was sort of second team. So that was his take on it. And
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I hate it. I hate it. I hate teamwork. I have teammates, team this, team. I don't like it. I don't know if people do. I know it makes for some more competitive cars, but I just don't think it racing is a team sport. But anyway, I've took up enough of your time here, guys. Thanks a lot.
Sure do appreciate it, Jerry. Thank you. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900, if you have a question for Doc Punch.
Doc, your thoughts on the Tennessee men's basketball team? It's just after that 10-1 start, they're 6-6. I talked to an NBA scout today. He said that it's basically two things. They don't have a point guard and they don't have a low post score. Do you think it's that simple as to why Tennessee has struggled?
You know, Jimmy, I when they started the year, I said this team's going to have something special because they play hard and they play unselfishly. And I don't know if it's because a couple of players have been relied on for scoring and they've had to have these guys for offense, but I've noticed a little bit of selfishness every now and then when they're not scoring, ended up turning it over. Maybe they're not being selfish. Maybe it's just the fact that they're trying to, with all their effort, trying to be able to generate some offense. But, you know, but what they typically generate in these spurts is a series of turnovers. So I don't know. I realize that, you know, teams are really playing hard inside, on the post, you know, being physical inside. Tennessee does not have a big physical presence inside. And then a point guard that can penetrate and dish. When Tennessee moves the ball with their motion offense, it can get, you know, can get an open shot or an open three. But most teams now, you know, contest that, realizing Tennessee doesn't have a lot of offense. They can't get those shots in the perimeter or get good looks in the perimeter. And that creates a problem. So Tennessee scores 57 or 87, you know, and if they score 75 or above, typically they win. If they score 60 or below and struggle with the offense, they don't. So, you know, I don't know. Boy, it just seems like, you know, they've got so much talent on that team, and they seem to, at times, they seem to be a well-oiled machine. When they get running and they dish the ball and they play so unselfishly, but at other times I think people maybe try to take too much on themselves and do too much. And when that happens, usually, you know, a double team or a turnover or a bad pass or, you know, or a charge, and suddenly, you know, you get further behind. I feel for Rick Barnes. It's a good problem to have all that talent, but it's a bad problem when suddenly, you know, one week you're hot as a Texas chili, and the next week you can't throw it in the ocean. I mean, it's just hard to figure.
When you go to the Kentucky game, that's when Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer combined for 50 points as Tennessee rallied to win it, and Tennessee has gone more to the freshman. Doc, do you think that's had a negative impact on the seniors like Fulkerson and Pons?
Well, I think you do what you have to do, and I think those freshmen realize that they've got the ability to score. But, you know, if I'm scouting Tennessee and I'm saying, okay, you know, we can be physical inside on Fulkerson because the officials apparently aren't calling it, not like they think they should until the game's out of hand. And then and these guys outside, you know, try to penetrate and score and pass to themselves. You know, I don't know. You know, I think it can certainly have a negative impact. You know, the guys can score, but so can other people if you move the ball effectively and move it around. So, that's what's – when you look at all those teams over the years that Dean Smith had at North Carolina or You know, Mike Krzyzewski's had it, Duke. They got all these great talent, but the key is they share the basketball. And, you know, if somebody's having a tough night, someone else steps up. Even if that guy steps up and gets shut down, there's always other people that can try to get him out. So I don't know what the answer is for Tennessee. I hope they can find the rhythm. I know they keep shuffling lineups. Hope they can find the rhythm. And if they could just get a little rhythm, a little roll going into the SEC tournament, I think this team could play two or three or four games in a row and be really, really good and hard to handle.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. We'll get a break. A final segment with Doc coming up to get a question or comment in under the wire. 656-9900, 656-9900. Doc joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, and his appearance brought to you by, again, New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall. Sports Talk rolls on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Hey.
From the Budweiser Studios of The Sports Animal.
Hey. Why are you so sweaty?
I was watching Cops.
We are 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. It's a final segment for us with Dr. Jerry Punch as he joins us for his weekly visit. And he does so courtesy of our friends at New Balance Knoxville. Shop local in the Suburban Shopping Center right there just west of Westtown Mall. Curbside pickup as well as delivery options available and incredible customer service. That's what's waiting on you the moment you head to New Balance Knoxville. Again, shop local in the Suburban Shopping Center. Doc and Jimmy, for that matter, we've seen there's – it's never too early to do rankings, and this is about quarterbacks, the best quarterbacks of the 2000s. So we are 20-plus seasons in, and it was Bill Connelly at ESPN that decided to put pen to paper and rank the top 60. Now, here's where he landed, he said, and it was tough, and I don't fault him for one moment because it would be very tough to rank, say, a 4 or 5 year performer for that matter, against those that just had one incredible bright shining moment as a college football quarterback or just 2 years or so. But anyhow, here's how his top five shapes up for the best of the 2000s. At number five, he goes Joe Burrow. Number four, Tim Tebow. Number three, Vince Young. Number two, Cam Newton. And he says the best college football quarterback to this point since we hit the 21st century, that would be Baker Mayfield. I think it's awfully tough. I think Mayfield was outstanding. The fact that he was a walk-on and then went from Texas Tech up to Oklahoma and finished with a Heisman Trophy is a remarkable story. Doc, though, I would have a tough time saying that the best quarterback in college football for these first two decades of this century did not win a national title. I know that that's such a lame comparison when you talk about NFL quarterbacks and careers, but I just think there are a number of great quarterbacks that did win championships. What do you think in terms of that top five?
Yeah, I mean, I was around when Cam Newton and, you know, and Tim Tebow and obviously Baker Mayfield. You know, I'm going to have to disagree. I think Deshaun Watson, what he did as a winner, his ability to run when he needed to throw the ball accurately. He was such a leader on the field. Watching him play Alabama in the national championship games, watching how he led on the sidelines. I've stood on the sidelines and watched a lot of quarterbacks over the years. And, you know, I stood there and listened to, you know, Peyton Manning. I've stood there and listened to, you know, to a lot of guys. And I just think Deshaun Watson would have to be in my top five. And I'm like you. You know, Baker Mayfield was good in what he tried to do and what he did, but, you know, I don't, you know, I think, you know, you take Deshaun Watson off a Clemson team, I'm not sure they're the same football team. I'm not sure they even win the ACC. But, boy, what a difference maker he was. Cam Newton, as was, yeah.
He had Watson number six, so he had him just on the outside looking in terms of his top five. But I also think that yours is an outstanding choice. And, again, I hate to throw any kind of handcuffs on Mayfield figuratively, but that's just based on I just think, I mean, he didn't play for a college football title, but he did win the Heisman, so I can understand he had a magical career. But I think I would probably have Watson ranked higher than Mayfield. Anything else you would say, add, Doc?
Burrow. Look at Burrow being the complete player he was and the leader he was, and what a difference he made. It was a good. Obviously, the system was perfect. The coordinator, the receivers, they had all the supporting cast for Joe. But gosh, you know the way he played. I mean, he was. Every time they tried to change a defense, he knew where to go with the football. So smart, so calculating, and that's to me. I definitely would have him in the top five, and Deshaun Watson in the top five. Tim Tebow, I just think from a leadership standpoint, I just thought he was such a competitor, and Cam Newton certainly in athleticism, certainly no question there. But gosh, I don't think Baker Mayfield would be my number one. He'd probably be four or five for me.
What do you think, Jimmy?
He wouldn't be my number one, and I think as you suggested, he's the only one of these top five or top six even that didn't win a national championship because all the others did. I would go – in fact, when you first mentioned that, and I didn't see the list, but when you first mentioned it, I wrote Tebow, Joe Burrow. See, Burrow had as good a year as Cam Newton, except he was there at LSU 2 years.
Yeah.
His first year wasn't as good as the second, but his second year was as good as I've ever seen for a college quarterback. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a nod because he had more time at LSU. I've got Watson third, Cam Newton fourth, and Baker Mayfield five with Vince Young right behind him. That's what I would look at. But and Mayfield was a tremendous quarterback, but number one, no, I would not go there.
Let's get a call from Sandra, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Sandra.
Hello, gentlemen. I hope everything's well with you all today. I just had a couple of questions about the NCAA tournament. I know Brian reported on Friday's show that there were going to be four teams that were on standby should the tournament start, and they were eliminated, or some of the teams were eliminated before then. But I had a couple of other questions. Are they going to test according to conference rules, or is it going to be an NCAA standard testing there? Will those four teams be in the bubble? And I know there's alternate sites. Will they go back and forth between sites, or will a team stay in one arena? And I'll hang up and listen to your comments on that. And you guys have a great afternoon.
Sure do appreciate it, Sandra. Great questions. And what they are going to have are standby teams, that if a team makes it into the field of 68, Doc, they are then going to have to let the NCAA know within 48 hours that they are indeed good to go. You're going to have a handful of teams on standby. It's pretty interesting that, and Jimmy, you were pointing out that when it comes to if somebody can't go due to COVID concerns, then one of the standby teams is going to be placed into action, and they're not going to reseed. They're not going to change a thing. So if all of a sudden there is a 15 seed that can't go and Duke doesn't make the field of 68, well, Duke there is a 15 seed playing a 2, or vice versa. If there's a 2 seed that can't go, then all of a sudden you got a team that was said to be among the top 11 seeds in any bracket is now going to go in as a 2 seed against a 15. So it's going to be something to watch. I'm not sure about if teams are going to be matched specifically with the multiple venues that will be in play in and around Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'm not sure that either. And the first four in that play-in, I don't recall exactly how they're doing that. But I'll say this. I wouldn't just have four on standby. Mm-hmm. I'd have eight.
Yeah.
You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, look how many different teams have been impacted or affected. So I would have, just to try to be safe, I would have eight on standby. And I don't know where they would locate them. I'm not sure about their seclusion or exactly what they would do with them. But I would also think, she asked about testing. I think you've got to have some type of an NCAA across-the-board testing. Now, it could be that most conferences already are doing the same thing the NCAA is doing. But the problem is you got how many, 340 teams, Doc, in Division I basketball? I would guarantee
right,
not all conferences are testing the same way. So I think you've got to have an NCAA standard before these teams are cleared to play, right? How else would you do this?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And, Jimmy, I agree with you. I think there needs to be at least two teams per region, if not three teams per region on standby. You know, you can't just have four teams. What if it's a West Coast team, or what if it's a team that's playing in a regional in Orlando? I mean, you got travel implications. You got, where are these teams sequestered? Where are they bubbled? You know, if you're all going to be in the Indianapolis area, you know, how many teams do you have there, and do you have enough? If they're all going to be in one location. And the standardized testing is important. You know, the NCAA tournament's hard enough to get ready for. Coaches, every time when you interview a coach, remember talking about Mike Krzyzewski, you say, you know, the first game or two, okay. After that, you have like a day, you have 36 hours of trying to get ready for your next opponent, if that. And so that's where a coach like Rick Barnes is such a huge asset, because of his ability and his coaching staff to be able to get his team ready. If you can get past the first couple of games, even though the competition gets stiffer, I mean, the experience of the coach coaching in a tournament like that makes a big difference. Now, you know what this reminds me of? If you got teams that are going to be filling in that you have no idea who you're going to play tomorrow, and suddenly you get a team that's a standby team, it reminds me of what NASCAR did this last year, where you showed up at a racetrack, no practice, no qualifying, you lined up by a draw, you had no idea where you were going to start, you had no idea who you were racing beside, you had no idea what kind of tires you had on the car or whatever, and you just raced. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be the NCAA tournament NASCAR style, where you may not know who you're playing tomorrow because they may be a fill-in team.
And if you do have, and Doc, I think yours is a very good idea to have at least two teams per region for each quadrant of the bracket, just standing by in case they're needed after they set the field to 68. What are they going to do in terms of, and I haven't seen anything that says they're trying to do anything differently with the NIT, because that would be your top, your 4-1s and essentially your 4-2s that you would have standing by. So how do you set the field for the NIT?
Yeah, exactly. Or do you pull from the NIT? Do you pull from there if someone else, because they're the next most deserving, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have someone sit out of the NIT? There's only going to be 16 in the NIT now, according to the downsizing they noted today. They've reduced the NIT to 16 total teams. So, but do you pull from there? You know, how does it work? It's going to be interesting.
It will be. Hey, Doc, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic week, and we'll catch up with you next Monday.
We'll talk next Monday. By the way, I'm on my way to do a show in the morning with Dale Earnhardt Jr., and we'll talk about how much fun, what we did, why we did it next Monday when I'm visiting with you guys.
All right. Look forward to that. Safe travels then. That's Dr. Jerry Punch joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, and his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall.